Hi lovely listeners, it's Lucy here and we are so delighted to have you on our Oh For Food's Sake journey with us. We've been going for over 2 years now and we're over 100 episodes in.
And we're really excited to connect with everybody, and what we wanted to do was just remind you how much your voice matters and how much the community that we're building matters. And your input is what keeps this podcast going. It's what keeps it vibrant. It keeps it engaging. And it means that we can continue to give you content that you really want to hear.
So we're on a mission to make Oh For Food's Sake even better and really make sure that it's meeting your needs and it's where, you know, you're getting the content that you want. So this is where you come in.
So we have got a really short survey, like 1-2 minutes it's going to take you to fill in. It's in the show notes. We would love it if you would click on that and just answer a few short questions about what is going to help you and what burning questions you've got, any content that you would like to hear on the podcast. So please go and click on that link.
Yeah, link in the show notes, and we can't wait to hear your perspectives. Welcome to the Oh For Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the joys and struggles of working in the food industry so you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, food industry coach. We've worked in the food industry for the last 20 years and we're here to share with you the benefit of our hindsight. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working to ultimately improve your career or business long term. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Oh For Food's Sake. Today we have a special guest with us, Stephanie Kingston, who is the co-founder of Pollen and Grace, who are category leaders in the fresh field good food to go market. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, Steph, like we just had that conversation. You're like, you can call me either, but you know, let's just call you Steph.
I'm pretty relaxed. I'm originally from Australia. We shorten everything. So
yeah. So Steph and I met through Alva, who works for you, doesn't she, Steph?
Yeah.
Alva did our original MPD course that we ran, I can't remember, it was probably 18 months ago now.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so it was the MPD, what's now become the MPD fundamentals course, because she was looking at putting processes in place and stage gate and stuff like that. And we know that she's implemented some of that stuff. So I wanted to get you on, not to just talk about that, but we can talk about that and how the business has evolved. But just because it's a really interesting, we love talking to women in the food industry. We love talking to women that have pioneered categories like Lucy had and now you have done as well. So, we'd just love to start by hearing about how did you end up doing what you're doing now? How did you end up launching Pollen and Grace?
I remember seeing Pollen and Grace when you'd very, very, very first launched a show in London. It might have been speciality. It could have been lunch. It was really early on. I've followed Pauline and Grace forever. So, this is very excited to have you here.
It's so wild to get to the stage whereby, like, obviously, you know, we're kind of 8-9 years in at the stage. And I've really noticed over the last kind of year, 18 months, like, you walk into a room and like, oh, Pollen and Grace, I buy this product. Which is just like, it's still wild. I don't think I'll ever get used to it. It's really exciting to get to a stage where people have actually started to have heard of us. Even though we are almost a decade into our
well, that's the thing, isn't it? People always see the overnight success and like, oh yeah, you've just been around a couple of years, and you're like, oh my god, you don't know the sleepless nights I've had to get here.
Exactly, which pretty much sums it up quite well. So had we known everything that would be involved, would we have done it?
Probably not.
Exactly. How we got into it was definitely a little bit of naivety and ignorance, which I think is exactly what you need to start a food business.
But did you have have a foodie background? Like, did is that how you ended up, or was it completely different?
For me, food has always been my world. One of my earliest memories is being at seven and thinking very seriously whilst walking around my garden in Sydney about what I'd call my restaurant when I was older, which would have been the Three Herbs. Thankfully, we have improved branding since then. And then I guess straight after school, because my understanding of what I could do within food was naturally, that's my interest, go and become a chef. So I, my apprenticeship as a chef in Australia, straight out of school. And then I moved to the UK and then got more into kind of the event side of things, which is where I met my co-founder, Christina, at my previous role, or both of our previous roles before Pollen. But essentially kind of my background in food up to that point had been kind of very fine dining, French cuisine, bread, butter, all those wonderful, exciting ingredients that make food so delicious. But in my kind of mid-20s, I then discovered, I developed a whole load of quite severe food intolerances that basically meant I had to change my diet overnight. And that meant cutting out all those exciting things like bread, butter.
All the nice stuff.
Exactly. All the really fun stuff. And I quite quickly realized that it was really challenging to find food that was, one, enjoyable to eat, and that I could actually eat. Working in an office with a busy office job, you'd wander down to Pret or the supermarket at lunchtime and, grab a salad or a sandwich. And I quite quickly realized there was literally nothing I could eat. And if there was something there, it was filled with chemicals, stabilizers, preservatives. And I was just like, this can't be good for me. Firstly, it's a very dull eating experience. And I believe that every meal is an opportunity for an experience, and it should not be missed. So I wasn't particularly keen on that, but also just wasn't comfortable putting all of that crap in my body. I was like, it can't be good for you.
Yeah, and I guess, when are we talking? Like, how long ago are we talking?
This was a good, like, decade ago, maybe a little longer. So kind of 10, 11 years ago, before kind of health and wellness kicked off, back in the day where you would not find kind of gluten-free or dairy-free products.
Yeah, you could only get it on prescription, couldn't you, back then? Yeah. Like, and celiacs could get it on prescription.
I remember it was around the same time that I started Podology, and it was exactly the same thing, exactly the same. I'd developed these intolerances. There was just nothing that I wanted to eat, and there was a real need, wasn't there? Yeah,
there really was. And luckily, I like cooking and can cook, so I kind of went down a rabbit hole and found all these new novel ingredients at the time, which are totally standard now, but like chia seeds, quinoa, etc., which just you couldn't get in supermarkets back then. It was like proper research online or a dusty health food shop, and started to kind of teach myself how to cook with them. It definitely wasn't something that was readily available. But the thing I found quite interesting, what kind of led me down the route to Pollen, was the office where my co-founder Chris and I were working at the time. We'd all sit down at lunch. I'd bring out my very elaborate prepared lunch. As I said, I think every meal should be an experience. So I was making salads kind of like we make with Pollen now. And the idea for Pollen really just came from my colleagues saying, like, oh, that looks good. If I pay you, would you make me one tomorrow? And kind of thought, hang on a minute. There's a whole lot of people here that don't have the same restrictions and intolerances that I have, and they are interested and excited by this kind of food. Maybe there's an opportunity to kind of shake things up and get people eating healthy natural meals that happen to be free from gluten and dairy, etc., that are actually going to be good for them.
I think it's that taste first thing, isn't it? We had the Love Raw chocolate people on, and they said exactly the same, because I think their strap line is something like chocolate that just happens to be plant-based or something. Yeah. It's that same philosophy, isn't it? It tastes really good. Oh, and it's...
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly it. If it doesn't taste good, you're not going to make the switch. To make a better choice, it needs to be just as delicious. So that's kind of, even now, that's our number one priority when we're developing it. Quality and taste, does it hit that mark? Because it doesn't matter how good it is for you. If it doesn't hit that, no one's coming back for round two.
So people started saying, can you make some for me? Can we you know, I'll pay you. And then what happened? Like, how has it gone from there to you being in supermarkets? and we, you know, in a quick synopsis, because we know there have been some highs and lows in that.
4 hours explaining this. It's been quite a while. It's been quite a journey. But long story short, essentially created an entry-level kind of plan, which was basically at the time I was in my mid-20s, I didn't have access to funding, didn't have a huge amount of capital behind me, just a small amount of personal savings. So at the time, and this was even before Deliveroo had launched, or about the time Deliveroo was launching in London as well. So Delivery now is like part of our everyday life, but delivery didn't really exist back then. So we actually started as a lunch delivery company because it was something I could start from my kitchen at home. It was accessible from a cost perspective. And it was just a great, easy way of getting started. So took the leap and quit my job. Chris was taking a sabbatical at a similar time. So she left, went traveling, which was a very smart idea.
Left you to do all the hard work.
Well, don't worry. She's
made up for it.
I think she's done her fair share. 6 months later, when she got off a plane, I handed her a notebook with a tally system that I used to keep our orders in, and went, "Here's our operating system. Can you sort this out?" She's definitely had a work cut out for her as well. So we started there, flying at the local tube station in the morning, making lunches in my kitchen at home, delivering them on a bike. And how Pollen ended up the way Pollen is today, where you find us kind of with a retail product on supermarket shelves, is it was purely by coincidence. We had the kind of local cafes and fitness studios kind of take an interest in what we were doing. A lot of people discovered us on Instagram, which again at the time was really just starting to kind of kick off. We had kind of quite a unique aesthetic, and the visual presentation of the food was something that was really kind of important to us as well. So because of that, we got a lot of traction quite quickly. And essentially we had these fitness studios saying, we stock the products you're delivering. And we thought, this is a great opportunity for us. We've got no money for marketing, but that's our exact target audience. Mm-hmm. Great. And then from doing that, we quite quickly realized that was a far more scalable business model. About kind of nine months into our journey, set about creating our first retail range, which basically involved us taking all of our favorite products from our lunch delivery days and packaging them up, making labels ourselves. Our first product had four different labels. It had a label for the front. It had an ingredients label on the back. It had a barcode and a use by date. So quite quickly, that basically being one person's full-time job, just to stick stickers on boxes.
Yeah.
We've learned lots of lessons along the way about kind of, how to make a product and what to not do, essentially.
So who was the first retailer you got into then?
Planet Organic. In January 2016, we launched into Planet Organic with a range of about 14 different products. Kind of salads were always our hero, but we had some breakfast pots, some sweet treats, and some snack pots as well. And from there, it really snowballed across 2016, and we ended up in pretty much all the boutique fitness studios, all the department stores, and all the healthy kind of food chains across London.
Because you were really challenging like the more premium salad, food to go salad products that were in like M&S and, you know, because you could get salads, and I'm talking about for not people with intolerances, normal people with, in inverted commas, you know, nice looking salads and stuff. And the market had developed quite a lot by 2016. But you were really still offering something quite different, weren't you? And in true challenger brand style, really.
For us, it was about making sure that we made a natural product, because there were, you're right, definitely kind of exciting, great products that maybe weren't free from and maybe weren't natural on the shelves of M&S. And I remember my first experience of walking into an M&S before I even moved to the UK, walking in and just being absolutely amazed at their food to go section. I think that was probably where I first fell in love with food to go, was M&S, because we don't have food to go as a kind of a category in Australia. It just doesn't exist. So I'd never seen anything like it before. It was amazing. But I guess what we were doing with our products back then was we were definitely still a premium brand. I'd say we were very London-centric, and that was kind of just where the market was back then for our kind of products. But we took a huge amount of inspiration probably from kind of the health and beauty industry in terms of the functional benefits of food. Mm-hmm. I really think we were probably like the first food brand to actually look at food in that way and look at how a product could be immune boosting or energy boosting, so on and so forth, which now seems totally standard, but genuinely kind of rewinding kind of 7-8 years ago, no one else was doing that. So I think that kind of approach of presenting a product differently and speaking about it differently and even designing it differently was probably what gave us the differentiation and cut through back then, which is still...
It has become more standard because it, like, there was a big surge, wasn't there, especially after COVID, of like sort of immune boosting. But it's still something that a lot of brands are reticent to do, and it's not easy to make those claims, is it? So it's quite a brave thing for a brand to do as well.
It's something that, like, it is at the foundation of everything we do still. I'd say as we've grown, we've become a far more accessible mainstream brand because essentially we're not going to change the world if we're only selling salads to a certain demographic of people at £8.50. We make healthy food, natural food, genuinely accessible to everyone. So that's why kind of grocery has been the most important channel for us to focus on as kind of a starting point, but also making sure that we develop a good product, quality product at an accessible price point has been so important to us as well. But also as you kind of branch out of those niches, the messaging and explanation of the product can get quite confusing. So we've kind of had to pick and choose our battles. So whilst we're still at the back end of our development, looking at nutrition and those kind of functional benefits and how all the ingredients work together, our messaging to the customer is probably simplified a lot because it needs to on shelf. Otherwise you're just going to confuse people and people have different priorities. So
I know what it feels like to be stuck in that cycle of feeling overlooked, undervalued, and overworked, frankly. I get it because I've been there and I've learned about the reasons why that happens to us and what you can do about it. I want you to imagine feeling like you can confidently ask for what you want, get those promotions, those great projects that you want to, and get the recognition you deserve at work. You can do that by joining the Invisible to Influential program. And in 5 weeks, you'll learn how to own your own voice, speak up with impact, and get the time back to spend doing the things that you really want to be doing. So it's time to say goodbye to that self-doubt, that self-deprecation, and hello to feeling really confident in yourself so you can make the impact that you really want to make inside and outside of work. I've run this course before. Those participants have said it's been a real game changer for them, and I want it to be a game changer for you too. So don't delay. Click on the link in the notes for more info, and I will see you there. If you're going to appeal to a wider market, you can't be too niche with your you don't want to be too niche with your messaging and put people off, because actually it's really tasty food. That's what
want.
We had Mark Worley on, who works as a independent consultant on insights. And one of the things he said, sometimes we just forget that the consumer need is that they are hungry and they want something nice to eat. Like, we overthink it, don't we? And overcomplicate and therefore confuse at the fixture.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, having that as part of your strategy behind the scenes is really important, to have all of that, but it doesn't necessarily have to end up in the...
Message. We've definitely had to strip away our messaging and simplify it so that we get those key points across. And, you know, all those wonderful bits and pieces are still there and they're available if you want to dig or you want to read back a pack or you want to read our website. But it's not the primary message.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because those people that are interested in those, in the deeper understanding, they go and find out about that. They'll seek it out, won't they? So, you've always manufactured yourselves, haven't you? Which
we did for the first kind of 5-6 years, and then about kind of, 2 years or so ago now, kind of after COVID, we made the decision to move to kind of a co-pack model. And essentially the reason, I'm so glad we did things the way we did, because I remember kind of back in 2016 when we were, that was we were kind of self-funded for the first 2 years. Then we raised investment to get our own production facility, which is based in London. And we kind of ran that ourselves for kind of about 4.5 years. But that really allowed us to be absolutely obsessed about product and to really intricately understand manufacturing ourselves. And back then, you know, no one was working with quinoa. You know, the bigger manufacturers didn't know how to cook with it. It was a great opportunity. It was challenging because it was essentially like running two businesses. You were running a manufacturing business and you were running a brand, and it definitely slowed us down, which was ultimately the reason why we then made the decision when we felt that our volume had gotten to the right place. And I guess the industry itself had gotten to the right place. We moved to a co-pack model. But those first kind of five, 6 years of doing things ourselves, I think was so fundamental to us really developing a unique product and retaining complete control over, which now we've been able to bring into to a manufacturing relationship.
That's fantastic, because it's so hard to get that balance, isn't it? And I have lots of conversations like this with brand owners, and I did it like that as well. We manufactured ourselves and then we outsourced, and it's so important to be able to have that control, but it does take so much of your time, doesn't it? And and that becomes so important because you've got to get the product out the door. But it's that balance and the constant juggle.
Production will always be the most urgent priority. So that's what we found. So if, you know, for example, we launched into co-op in 2019. We doubled our volume literally from one production to the next, and we then spent the next 3 months really stabilizing the procedures in our kitchen to meet that new demand, as opposed to managing that account and moving on to the next sale. Since we moved to kind of a co-pack model, it's allowed us to grow much, much faster.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's the, you know, it's a completely different skill set, and Lucy talks about that quite a lot. Like, you can't do everything, and it's I think the brands that succeed identify at which point they need to know, either get a co-packer or outsource their technical or you know, get help with innovation. That's how you succeed, because if you just think, oh god, I'm not gonna, you know, we've got to do it all, we've got to keep it all in-house, you're never going to scale.
And that's exactly what we love manufacturing. Like, don't get me wrong, I love a good factory visit. It is it's great, and we're very lucky to have an amazing manufacturing partner that we work with now, where we probably have a much more unique hands-on relationship because of our interest in manufacturing and because of our good understanding of how to make products like ours from doing it ourselves. But the real value that we offer is through the brand that we create and kind of our brand values and vision, but also our ability to kind of innovate within product in a very unique way. So that's where we wanted to focus our resource, to be able to create a really amazing brand with innovative, exciting products that are going to be quite unique. And again, I guess that's kind of where we've focused our attention over the last 2 years in terms of building our team. And that's allowed us to this year kind of, we spend a bit of time really refining back our product range to get it absolutely spot on. And now we've started to kind of build that out again and added kind of new categories and innovation. And we have a fair bit more planned for next year, which is quite exciting.
I was going to say, what's next? What's next for you? Now you've taken production off your hands. You're an entrepreneur. You must have a million new ideas or new routes to market that you want and stuff. So what's next?
Definitely. Well, I guess the most exciting thing to mention is this week we've launched into Waitrose. So that is literally yesterday. So mid August. Finally in Waitrose with exclusive SKU. There's a limited edition Vietnamese salad we've developed with them. Earlier this year we launched wraps over the summer. So we're expanding our distribution there. They're going into Sainsbury's next month with a new SKU. There may also be a limited edition festive SKU that you'll be seeing.
I love a Christmas sandwich or wrap or salad or whatever it is.
It's a bit of fun, exactly. It's a bit of fun. It's going to be done. So yeah, we're quite excited about that. And then we have a new product category launching, which isn't in food to go, in January. So watch the space. We've got
exciting
a product category launching, six products coming to market in January. So that will make it a big year for us next year.
Oh, wow.
Kind of we went into this year with 4 products and we'll be starting next year with 16 products.
Oh, so wow. I have a guess. I'm not going to say it, but I'm going to see if my guess becomes true with the category that you're going to go into.
I'm kind of intrigued. I won't say yes or no, but.
Well, this is very obvious because it's me. But I feel like I would like to see Pollen & Grace ready meals.
Mm. Well,
watch this space.
Watch this space.
I do like a ready meal.
So you're diversifying, you're growing, and that in itself has got new challenges, I guess. So what are you doing to sort of, well, talk to us about the challenges? And, you know, I'm sort of thinking about, you know, the conversations we've had with, we had with Alva on the course and that we did, in terms of you sort of, it can be entrepreneurial and then you sort of have to systemize a little bit, you know, has that been part of it as well for you?
Definitely. And I guess that's a big part of why we ended up really stripping out our range back as well. So probably one of our biggest challenges was moving from a product development perspective, was moving from manufacturing in the house, whereby we could have a product on shelf in 2 months. We could test stuff. It could be very fluid and entrepreneurial because you didn't have the timelines and the process and the infrastructure that you know we would say have now that we're a bit bigger and we were manufacturers. So yeah, we definitely started to notice kind of maybe about 2 years ago that we needed to rethink how we looked at product development. And it's something that we're kind of constantly now refining in-house, but also making sure, I'd say we probably had much more of a product team focus on product before. Whereas now we have a far more kind of collaborative team approach, taking kind of our marketing and insights teams, our kind of sales, commercial and operational teams into the kind of ideation stage. But even just, something that we've really enjoyed, and I know Alvarez really enjoyed as well, is kind of taking the learnings from that course and then implementing those kind of stages and processes, which just kind of helped keep us on track. Especially as you're kind of working across departments and making sure that you get input at the right stages. So that has been, it's been a really positive step for us. It's also helped us, like, as you said, there's so many things we could do. There's so many different shiny objects you could go after. We could do this product, we could go into that category. Having something to kind of make you think and assess and validate before running full steam ahead has been really important, because obviously there's so much we could do, but you know, we need to take our time and do a few cool things really well, as opposed to trying to do everything and maybe not quite getting there with it all. So I'd say that's
It sort of grounds you, doesn't it? It'll come out, I don't know what order these podcasts coming out, but we've done an episode on entrepreneurial mindset and talked about how, because we've got that, and you know, we see that in a lot of founders, but that, and we talked about absolutely that you sort of need. Lucy was going on about how much she loves the critical path and the stage gate, because when you're like that and you have so many ideas, you sort of need that check in place to make sure that you're not just being spontaneous and, you know, there is actually a business case.
Understand it. Yeah. Exactly. So that's been a really positive for us, and still definitely a challenge. And though I think we've had ideas that we've decided to, like, maybe not progress with as a result of that, or we've kind of reprioritized our resource after going through that kind of stage gate process and looking at kind of gate zero and where the opportunity is and where it's most valuable for us to spend our time. So I think, that it's been a really great help in terms of prioritization of as well.
That's so good to hear for us, because like, having Alva was really a great person to have on the course, because she was like really engaged and she fed back to us, and she told us what she was doing, which was fantastic. And it's so lovely for us to hear that, you know, a process that we helped train in has been put in place and is working, and you adapt it to your business. And that's the thing. And we go into bigger businesses that need the engagement so that the bigger teams understand how important the stage gate is. And it's not about restricting sales. It's about making things slicker and making the right decisions. So that's just so lovely for us to hear.
But it's great to hear that you've done it at this stage in the business, because that will help you, you know, it will help elevate the business as you move on. You're not going to be trying to retrofit that in and go like, how do we take control? You're doing that already. You've put that lens in.
No, it's definitely helped us to make the right decision. And, you know, like there are categories we could have gone into that we then realized, hang on a minute, maybe the opportunity isn't as big here. So let's prioritize our resources elsewhere.
And, yeah.
You know, that's why we ended up launching Wraps this summer, because we saw kind of after looking at a few different categories that that was kind of the biggest opportunity for us at this point and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Mm. So very exciting times coming ahead.
Indeed.
And not just for you professionally, but personally too.
Yes. Yeah. So Poland is my first baby, which has taken up most of my time for the better part of a decade. Now it's time for baby number two, which is actually a real baby.
A human baby.
My first human baby is coming in a few weeks.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a bit
so wild. The juggle's going to be real. I think you and Lucy need to have a chat off air. We won't do it now, but chat off air, because that she's got some stories to tell about.
I can tell you how not to do it, basically.
There is a reason why I've waited so long. There's a reason
I didn't wait at all, and it was stupid.
So you're gonna have a juggle.
I don't regret my children, just to caveat that.
They're gonna listen to this in 20 years' time and be in therapy.
I definitely don't regret my children. I actually should have just taken some time off and enjoyed my babies a bit more.
Yeah, no, it's tough early weeks. Especially when your business is also your baby and you care so much.
So hard.
But I do feel like where Paul is at a stage now where we've got a really we don't have a huge team, but we've got a really good, strong team. We've spent kind of the last year or so developing a really solid team structure, but also kind of senior management team. So I feel like it's in good hands for me to take my eye off the ball just for a few months.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's be honest, it's probably going to be 3 weeks and I'm going to be messaging it.
You can tell her as much as you like, Lucy. Yeah. You can't.
Oh, 3 weeks is a luxury. 3 weeks sounds amazing. I didn't even take 3 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
But it's funny because I was employed when I had my baby, and I took a year, and I wish I'd taken less time, like in hindsight.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that.
It's a balance, isn't it?
You know, I love her dearly and all of that. But actually, you know, I lost part of who I was. That's how I felt. So, you know, there's a balance in all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. No idea what that will look like, but I'm going to try and find the two. My husband's an entrepreneur as well, so the deal has always been that this is not a traditional setup. We both have our own careers and our own businesses, and whilst biologically it's on me for a little while, we'll find that setup that that allows us both to look after our other babies as well.
That's great to hear.
Lovely.
I love it. I love it. So it's been so wonderful talking to you, Steph. I think I always like to sort of ask a question towards the end of the podcast of like, just to help listeners and for you to reflect as well. In terms of, you know, looking, I'm laughing because I'm about to say, you know, what would you tell your younger self? And I always think it's like, don't go into the food industry. That's what I always think I'd say to my younger self.
You couldn't say that. What would you say?
What would you say to your younger self?
I would say, I think probably one of the biggest mistakes I've made over the decade is sometimes thinking that like people know better than you or they know more than you. And there's definitely decisions we've made with Pollen that we've then had to go back and reverse because that person's an expert. They know far more than me. And it maybe hasn't been the right choice for kind of our brand or our products. So I'd say,
be careful who you take advice from.
Exactly.
Yeah. Believe in your instinct sometimes. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up in kind of process and stuff like that, but there is something so important about also kind of trusting your gut and not running wildly with it, but just kind of
that's such good advice. And it's actually really interesting because having been in your position in terms of having a brand and now doing what I'm doing where people are employing me to be like the product development expert, Sometimes I do push back on my clients and I'll say, because I have this feeling that, well, you know, you're doing something that nobody else is doing. You started this business, you saw something. Like, sometimes, like, I can tell you what I think and from my experience, but take that and then you do something with it, because that's, yeah.
It's so true. And like the amount of things we've been told over the years, like I still remember being told that you guys have a super niche premium brand. There is no way you're going to break the mainstream. You've gone as far as you're going to go. You're never going to be in Tesco. Like fast forward to now, we're about 600 Tesco stores exactly where, you know, we're in Asda. Yeah. You know, we're most of the major grocers now. And had you taken that advice or listened? So everyone has their own lens, don't they? It's important to take advice and to make really kind of informed decisions, but also sometimes it's the reason why you break through is because you maybe think about things differently, or you
think really good.
You're willing really to break through the wall that is unbreakable.
And trust your gut. Love that. Love that. Thanks so much, Steph, for coming today, particularly when you're not far off giving birth.
When
we got in contact, you were like, no, we need to do it in August because, like, I can't guarantee I won't have a baby. But if we put it back to September, I was like, okay.
Well, September is a lovely month to be born. I was born on the 13th of September and my son was on the 19th. So it's a fabulous month to be born.
Amazing. Lucky day was the 20th. So I could probably
wonderful.
That range. And as a January baby myself, that was great growing up in Australia. It was summertime. It is not a fun time in this hemisphere to be born. So September is time
It'd be the oldest child in the school year. We always think about school years, don't we? Don't think that far ahead. It just like you don't in business. Sometimes it's better to not think too far ahead. Don't think too far. Don't start thinking about school yet. You don't need to worry about that.
One step at a time. Thank you for having me. It's always very lovely to talk about my first baby, Pauline.
Fabulous. And if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can find us on Instagram at Pauline and Grace, or you can find me at Stephanie@PaulineandGrace.com if you want to reach me specifically. But otherwise, they're probably the two best routes.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. And I know everybody will have just found that an amazing episode to listen to. So, and good luck with baby number two.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope that this has been useful to you. As ever, we would love it if you could rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. It really does help us reach and support more foodies out there.
We'd also love it if you'd come and join us in the Facebook group, the Over Food Sake community. And if you want to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and training and can be found on LinkedIn as Lucy Wager.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any one-to-one coaching, group facilitation, or training, then contact her on LinkedIn at Amy Wilkinson Coach. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
See you next time. This podcast is sponsored by Damer Ingredients, who provide best-in-class functional ingredients such as starches, proteins, fibres, and gums, to name but a few, into food manufacturers across the UK and Ireland.
I've worked with Damer on various projects for my own brand and with my clients. And what I love about working with them is their in-depth technical knowledge and their ability to apply that to the specific products that you're actually working on.
So they've become an extension to your own development team, supporting them with their knowledge from concept through to launch. To find out more, visit www.damer.com.